Hello and welcome along to Glow West, where we chat about sex, sexuality and the body from a sexual wellness perspective. Glow West is part of the Tortoiseshell family, and if you like the content, please support the network at patreon.com/tortoiseshell if you can. So today we're getting our glow on with a guest who does some very interesting work in the area of sexual wellness, with pleasure at the heart of her mission. Today I'm chatting to Samantha Evans, who co-founded Joe Divine, which is an online sex toy company, with her husband Paul back in 2007. And this company only sells skin-safe sex toys and sexual lubricants. So having a professional background in nursing, she's also a features writer and sexual health and pleasure expert for Joe Divine. She has been featured extensively in the media, most recently in the Channel 5 program, How to Have a Better Orgasm. So with this extensive knowledge about sex toys and sexual lubricants, she enjoys creating informative, practical articles about sexual health and pleasure, which endeavor to normalize sex, help people of any age talk about it, and discover ways to enjoy sex in whatever way they want or are able to. So hi, Sam. Welcome along to Glow West, and thanks for chatting with me today.
Hi, Caroline. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, that's quite the bio. That's, you know, you got a lot of diversity going on there. So if we kick off, I suppose you've just recently been on the Channel 5 show, How to Have a Better Orgasm, which we don't unfortunately get in Ireland, the TV show, not necessarily the orgasms.
No.
Can you tell us about what that experience was like, talking about orgasm on national TV, and what topics you discussed?
It was an amazing experience. We actually had an all-female team who were just brilliant, and it was just very, very relaxing to do. I'm incredibly proud to have taken part in it. I didn't meet any of the other women beforehand, though I have met one of them since, which is lovely. And we talked about all things. So we talked about our experience, our first experience of orgasm, our sex education, which obviously a lot of us, I think every one of us said it was lacking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the things that we do to help us orgasm now, what actually impacts upon our orgasms, different things about, you know, our own relationships and communication with partners, and, you know, how we can actually help other women enjoy orgasms for the first time or enjoy better orgasms through the, you know, what we actually talked about.
Fab. Okay. So, well, you talked about your first orgasm on TV. Do you mind sharing that story again with us?
Well, I think we all talked about we were able to give ourselves an orgasm, but we talked about our first orgasm with a partner. And for me, it was with my husband, who I met when I was 23. We've been together for 28 years. I'd had boyfriends, not long-term relationships. Not one of them had been able. And he did. And I remember turning over and just saying to him, thank you. Because I was really surprised. It was like, oh, wow. You know, that was just amazing. And obviously, he's carried on doing that because I've kept him for 28 years. So, you know.
He's doing well.
But I think a lot of, you know, yeah, he is. He is a keeper. But I think for me, I talked about the fact is I knew how to give myself an orgasm. So why didn't I say to these other partners, well, this is how to touch me. But I just assumed that I would have an orgasm through penetrative sex because that's what we've been led to believe and taught. Mm. And, you know, seeing films like When Harry Met Sally and, you know, my sex education was non-existent. Even during my nurse training, I didn't really learn a lot of stuff. So it was weird that I, you know, I felt quite frustrated. I look back now and think, why didn't I tell them? But I didn't. And I think, you know, it's quite a difficult conversation to have to somebody to say, well, actually, I touch myself in this way. But if you touch me like this, then this will work. But I never did.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I assumed that obviously penetrative sex, I'm going to have an orgasm like everybody does on the telly or in films.
And it without any communication between you over what's actually working for either of you. Hmm. Yeah.
Well, and also none of them knew their way around a clitoris as well. I don't recall hardly any of them ever touching my clitoris. It was instantly straight into the vagina, which, you know, and not in a pleasant way. And it was, you know, so it's, again, their lack of knowledge as, you know, young men, that their knowledge of the female body, you know, and I haven't actually said to them, well, like, you need to touch my clitoris for me to have an orgasm. So.
Do you think that's a problem of, sometimes I think in society we expect men to automatically know how to do sex and women are more passive and, you know, you're not meant to speak up for yourself as such. Mm. You know, is that like, that leads to like bad sex basically?
Yeah, and I think it is. I think there's this assumption that they know what they're doing, and you know, and obviously I'm witness to that because I did it myself. And I think it's actually asking for what works for you. And I know the conversations I have with people when they have a good sex life and they actually want to carry on having a good sex life, they're the ones who are actually communicating with their partners. Mm-hmm. You know, so many women I talk to and they go, yeah, no, my husband didn't even know what a clitoris was. And then, you know, they may no longer be with them and they're with a new partner to go, wow, he knew straight away. So I think we're assuming too much, you know, if they're not being taught it in sex education, because female pleasure is completely omitted from sex education, then how would they actually know? And they want to know, they actually want to know what buttons they should be pressing too, because it's really important.
Yeah, well, literally pressing what button as well. Yeah. So how do we improve that confidence then for, you know, people who have clitorises to be able to communicate, here, this is actually what I like, can you please do this?
Well, I think actually just what you've said, rather than criticising somebody, it's sort of actually sort of saying, well, actually, I quite like being touched like this. Can I show you? You know, moving the hand and, you know, not everybody's going to get it. But you sort of, you know, I think often personally from personal experience, you know, with people before my husband, a lot of men are quite rough. They don't seem to handle us very carefully or gently. Yeah. And for me, I love a gentle touch. And I think it's that because they've seen it on porn, maybe, that they've seen this sort of, you know, quite rough handling, this rough sex. And a lot of women don't actually like that. They don't like the rough fingering. They don't want to be, you know, you're not going to, you know, men don't like having their penises grabbed in that way because it can be quite painful and uncomfortable. And it's the same with our clitorises too. So I think it's being very gentle. That's important, and having that conversation. But there's going to be people out there who feel they can't have that conversation, and they're going to be partners, both male and female, who don't want instruction because they think they know what they're doing is fine. Which are going to get anywhere, are we? We need to have an honest conversation because that can be completely transformative in a lot of relationships.
And do you think, well, you know, if you're talking about honest conversations, do you think maybe there is an honest conversation to be had with yourself of, is this the right partner for you if you don't feel that you can talk to them about your sexual pleasure? Because it is such a big part of most relationships.
I think it is. And it's something we hear quite a lot with our customers who, you know, maybe have a new partner for whatever reason. And that new partner is really good at sex, or they're not so good at sex. They've had a good sex life. And again, it's really difficult, isn't it? And you're saying, well, should you stay with somebody just because, you know, if even if the sex isn't very good, but if it's really important to you, you know, make such a difference. And it can, you know, often I've had people saying, well, I would have stayed with my partner if I'd have known all this. You know, it was like, yeah, it's quite sad to hear that relationships break down because of the sexual issues that a lot of people face. And actually, some of them are quite simple to overcome. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, some of them are not. It will take a multidisciplinary team approach to actually sort of help people. But people don't seek advice, or when they do seek advice, it's not good advice. Or, you know, but generally, it's because people don't ask because they assume that there's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah, which is very sad, you know. Like, do you think shame and stigma play a part in that? Because there are resources out there, you know, and there is help out there. We don't have to accept that as a situation that's permanent or inevitable.
Completely shame and embarrassment, and the fact is they aren't talking to friends and family about it, you know, if they're not talking to their partner. But also they do go and see a healthcare professional, and not everybody is enlightened as you and I are, and they're often told, oh, it's something you just have to put up with. And you know, and that's quite frustrating too. And I work with such a wide range of healthcare professionals helping people with their sexual intimacy and pleasure and health. And because that's what I get frustrated when somebody phones me and I can give them advice and they can buy a product, they can buy a lubricant, and they go, oh, that's great because no one's ever spoken to me about this. I went and spoke to so-and-so. They didn't give me any advice. They told me that, you know, there's not much you can do. Or people don't seek advice because they think they have to put up with it. You know, we think that sex life's going to be rubbish once you hit menopause, and it's completely untrue. Yes, there are problems that you might face, but you can overcome them, and often people end up having a better sex life, you know. So I think available, and these healthcare professionals are available to help them.
Yeah, there's just not a lot of training there. You know, I know people who run nursing courses, and I think the sex part is like, you know, a half hour lecture, and that's pretty much it. So, you know, or, you know, if you go to a doctor and you're suffering from depression and you take medication for that and that stops your sex drive, well, the issue is like, well, it's fine. You know, the most important thing is your mental health, not your ability to orgasm, which is really sad because that's going to cause you even more stress.
Well, I think this is the issue as well. You know, I mean, they're lucky they've got half an hour, because I didn't get any during my nurse training at all. Yeah. And I'm really pushing for this to be part of nursing and medical school training, because it's really important. This is why I do talks to healthcare professionals. And often they'll come up to me and go, I had no idea about that. That's really changed the way in which I'm now going to talk to my patients about sex. It has to be a compulsory part of training, as you said about the antidepressants. But we talk about people who've been through cancer treatments. It's not a compulsory part of treatment, but it needs to be part of it, because so many of these people experience sexual health problems in addition to having to go through a cancer diagnosis and treatment. Yeah. But lots of people with health issues, you know, be it, you know, whatever they're going through. But as you say, side effects to medication, you know, when I say to people, well, antihistamines will dry up your vaginal lubrication, therefore you need to use a lube. And they go, I had no idea, you know, they get hay fever. It's simple things. So, you know, and also, as you said, with the antidepressants, they maybe could go on to something that has fewer sexual side effects. You know, I understand the whole, you know, looking after your mental health and, you know, treating the depression. But then, you know, if your sex life was important to you, then that can impact upon your level of depression too. And relationships. So it's actually, you know, we need to have it as part of training. That's really something that I want to push for, because it's just so important. It wasn't part of my training, you know, and I think it's really, really important.
I think it might come down as well, I think, in a lot of academia as well, you know, like the whole, you know, that whenever if you see the 3D structure of the clitoris, you know, the little winged monster that it looks like that was only discovered in the 90s. Yet we knew so much about male orgasm for centuries.
Yeah. And actually, I think a lot of women are dismissed as having sort of, you know, female sexual dysfunction, when actually they just don't know what works for them. Yes, and I think, you know, going into a GP surgery, you know, and actually I work with some fantastic GPs who say to their patients, well, here you go, use this really good lubricant, go and buy yourself a sex toy and then come back to me in a couple of weeks' time. And I've got one doctor and she said, it's just brilliant, because I walk into the practice and they've got a big smile on their face. I thought, oh, that worked, you know, and they're really grateful.
Have a glow about it.
And it's just such a simple thing. Yeah, exactly. You know, I've got customers who've lost their partners, and actually, you know, they're experiencing sexual bereavement. It's a big thing. I've written an article about it. And it's so sad to hear the conversations, and they're buying a sex toy because they miss that physical part of their relationship. It will never replace a partner. But they tell me, you know, I'm having a better night's sleep. My mental health feels better. I feel much more relaxed. I feel a bit more happier. You know, I'm enjoying regular orgasms. And some GPs are saying to these people, you know, go and get yourself a sex toy, you know, because actually a lot of, you know, bereavement impacts upon your health in so many different ways. And this is one part of, you know, bereavement that you can't say to some people, I'm really missing the sex, my sex life. If somebody say, how are you getting on? You know, it's not a conversation that we can have. Again, it's one of those taboo conversations, but we speak to an awful lot of women in particular who've been bereaved. Or their partner has a health issue and they're no longer able to have sexual intercourse together. So they buy, you know, sex toys for each other, or, you know, she buys a sex toy. So,
The huge parts of conversations around bereavement, because that's such a large part of life, and your sex drive doesn't stop once, you know, your partner dies, you know, but you just don't, like, we definitely don't talk about that in Ireland. People just give you loads of food and lasagnas and sandwiches and, you know, feed you up that way. But to actually talk about the emotional side and especially the physical side, it's just such a gap in the conversation at the moment.
Well, like, I think it's the same. It's the same here in, you know, in the UK. We don't have this conversation, and it's really sad. And actually, you know, you can lose your partner at any age. You know, young and old, and if you've been with that person for a long time and the sex was really good, what do you do? You know, it's really sad. So we do need to have that conversation too. You know, but again, maybe doctors don't feel like they can bring it up, it's not appropriate, which it may not be, but you know, sometimes it might be quite nice to actually ask people, well, how are you getting on, are you missing them, and you know, maybe I don't know.
yeah absolutely, like maybe we can produce some like pamphlet sex after death and best vibrators to get, that kind of thing. Maybe. I know you've talked a little bit there about, I suppose, myths around sex, that, you know, where myths around sex spring up when we don't have accurate, healthy information about sex. And I know you spoke, you wrote an article about sex myths, and you said that you gave one the statistics of it, of couples can have satisfying sexual intercourse, which can last between 3 and 13 minutes. So I think the idea of like how long should sex be is one of the big myths. You know, we have Sting talking about, you know, he has sex for 4 hours or whatever it is. Now, most of us don't have that time to spend. So how does the 3 minutes come into things?
I think three minutes is quite quick for, you know, it's for a lot of couples. I think that's often a complaint that women have, that their partners don't last that long. But it, you know, quickie sex can be very, very satisfying. But, you know, there are this myth that you've got to go for hours and hours and hours for it to be satisfying. But that sex play could be all sorts of things. I think it's not just intercourse, and we're always focusing on penetration, aren't we?
Yes, yeah.
You know, people have fantastic sex lives doing so many different things, sexual activities, which, you know, are non-penetrative. You know, not everybody has a penis and not everybody has a vagina. And it's actually, you know, we have to move away from this whole penis and vagina conversation and penetration and it's the be all and the end all. And actually, a lot of people are doing amazing things, which could last all afternoon if you've got time to spend in bed all afternoon, which you might do at the moment. You know, if you're in isolation.
For coronavirus. But,
depends if you've got your kids around. Yeah, exactly. So, as you say, it's dispelling those myths that people think, you know, I've got to keep going, I've got to, you know, sex has got to be this long, or, you know, oh dear, that was disappointing, it was quite quick. But there are so many other things you can actually do. So, you know, as you say, it's dispelling those myths that surround sex.
I think porn plays a part in that as well, of like, you know, they're professional athletes, basically, you know, who are, you know, well trained to last a long time on camera. And we also don't see the camera cutting away and all the breaks and, you know, everything like that. So, you know, I know you've written before about like sex and like it is on TV and that it's messy and noisy and smelly. And so how do we make people comfortable with the real life messiness of sex and the fact that you're going to wash your sheets quite a lot? Or you should be washing your sheets quite a lot.
Well, I think, again, it's the whole thing, you know, my kids know that porn is not real sex, it's acted sex. We know a few people who work in the industry, you know, I've had conversations with them, porn actors, who, about, you know, the copious amounts of lubricant they use, that they actually, you know, they've had irritation from using poor lubricants. Yeah. And that they couldn't actually have sex if they didn't use lube. But we don't actually see that on camera, do we? It's the assumption that this person is instantly wet. And also, you know, we know that male actors actually, you know, take penis enhancing, you know, erection drugs and different devices. You know, people having anal sex, we know that they're wearing anal toys 2 or 3 hours before they're actually doing a shoot. So, you know, there's lots of things that they do on camera that we don't know about. And I think we need to see more noisy, messy, embarrassing sex. And we are actually, you know, I mean, the groundbreaking sex education program was just brilliant. But we've actually seen a lot more stuff. I mean, I think Netflix are producing sex for people or whatever their sexual orientation is. And I think we actually have to see that. And we have to get away from this whole thing of the weegasm, as I call it, where couples always orgasm or climax together, which I've just written an article about it. Because, you know, that's a myth. You know, that simply doesn't happen. And no one ever, you never see them getting out of bed, do you? Waddling with the tissues between their legs, you know, and somebody lying on the damp patch and having to have a wee after you've had sex, which we all should be doing.
Yeah.
But I think we're seeing a few. No, exactly.
Well, and like, even like the concept of sex towels, you know, I remember like Beyonce made a comment about, she had this like some fancy designer sex towel and people were like, what? I can't believe she's actually mentioning that. Oh my God. So yeah, maybe people can get like, you know, cool patterns in their sex towels, or, you know, something fun to make it more fun and an open conversation maybe.
Yeah.
And so how do you, I mean, you know, my friend Kelsey, she runs a site, it's like Sexually Awkward, and she's like, embrace the awkwardness, and you know, every sex isn't going to be smooth, and you know, someone's probably going to fall off a bed at some point, or you know, your body's going to make really weird noise, and so how do you, I suppose, allow people to be comfortable with that awkwardness and to use humor to laugh at yourselves in the middle of sex?
Well, we always say to people, the most important thing is that, you know, that it's pleasurable, it's consensual, and it's fun, because that's the idea of sex, isn't it? It's not supposed to be this serious thing. And I think, you know, for me, talking honestly and openly about my own sex life and the good and the bad, and, you know, just saying to people, well, this is what sex really is. This isn't, you know, it's not an act, it's not a performance. And actually, I often say to people, okay, well, if that didn't work for you, you could try something else, you know, when they're looking to explore sex toys, I say, don't buy the biggest thing that we've got on the website, because people phone up and go, you do realize this is our biggest sex toy, have you used a sex toy before? And they go, no. So then I have to direct them to one of our smaller toys.
So don't, it's actually,
you know, having that you know, so having that conversation, normalizing it, and saying, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good. Sometimes the unexpected sex is really, really good, and sometimes the planned sex is really, really good. You know, it's actually just exploring different things that actually work for you.
Absolutely. And if you're talking there about the performance of sex as well, you know, you also wrote a piece that spoke about how only 4% of women are fully satisfied with the strength of their orgasms. So do you think that pressure to be, you know, your orgasm is, it should be you screaming from the rooftops and annoying your neighbors, and you know, everyone should fall back in the bed panting and you know, your hair is all over the place. How does that impact how women connect with their orgasms if they're not like that?
Well, I think that's actually, again, a myth, isn't it? It's what we see in porn, what we see in films and on TV. I'm a quiet orgasmer because I've had to be, because we've got three kids. I've learned to do that over the last 20 years. But actually, a lot of women are. For me, I'm quiet because I'm holding my breath, because that's part of the whole process for me. It actually heightens my pleasure and, you know, the orgasm itself. So I think, you know, it's working, finding out what works for you. And if you're able to masturbate on your own and enjoy an orgasm, whatever works for you, then, you know, don't feel that you have to scream and shout when you're with a partner. But obviously that's all part of faking an orgasm as well. So, you know, if they're actually faking an orgasm to try and help a partner think that they're being really, really good, you know, that the sex is so great and all, and actually really, really turning me on, with really, in a way, they're not helping anybody, not helping themselves or their partner. So again, it's, you know, that's why we need to see images and film of different orgasms. I think that actually can be really, really beneficial for people to say, you know, we all orgasm in a different way. You know, we're not all screaming. No, don't get me wrong. Yeah. There are the screamers out there.
Yeah, we hear
annoying if you're their neighbour.
Well, that I think that's one concern, you know, and I've had a couple of women say that before, of like, oh, I could never let them see my sex face when I come because it's scrunched up and it's all messy. And you know, it's like, what kind of face are you expecting to have? You know, and like, so how do we get away from that fear of like judgment over an orgasm face?
I think, again, that's to do with communication, because what does a you know, your partner's sex face look like? We all look different, don't we? And we all, so I, you know, again, it's to do with communication, but it's also to do with confidence, to do with body confidence, your trust. You know, that's all part of this when you're actually having, you know, sex with somebody. If you feel comfortable to let yourself go, because that's a problem with a lot of women. They've struggled to let go.
Yeah.
And therefore they're constantly thinking, am I going to have an orgasm? Is it happening? You know, oh dear, do I look fat? I've got such speech to so many women say, I never go on top because I'm so fat. I'm going, oh, that's one of my favourite positions. I said, and I'm overweight. It's like, you know, I don't care because I'm in the throes of passion and I'm enjoying the sex. So, you know, it's actually a confidence thing too, isn't it? It's actually getting people to be more body confident rather than worrying about the way they look. And now they're sucking in their tummies, and how do their boobs look? And does my bottom look big? And
Well, that's such a huge thing, that confidence, because like, your brain is like pretty much your biggest sexual organ, right? Like, you know, what's going on in your brain dictates, you know, your body responses sometimes. But you know, if we're thinking ourselves out of an orgasm, it's really sad and really infuriating. That, you know, how do you get your brain to just stop criticizing your body and focus on pleasure instead?
Yeah, I mean, that's something I had was experiencing problems. So I think I was probably starting the perimenopause in my early 40s, and I sort of had switched off a bit, and I wasn't really engaged with sex, and I was still having orgasms, but they were a bit meh. And even when my husband noticed it, and he said, well, what's going on? And then I thought, oh, this is ridiculous. I need to start taking control and start enjoying this more. And by doing that, switching off my brain and thinking, right, let's focus on this, I ended up enjoying, you know, sex more. He enjoyed it more because I was engaged. And I think for women, this is a particular problem, you know, switching off your head, you know, sort of worrying about, you know, the washing or the packed lunches or what else is going on, or you're not quite in the mood, you'd rather be reading your book. But, you know, if you actually just take the time to focus on that short period of time, because the sex is probably not going to last long anyway, if you're tired at the end of an evening.
Yeah.
But it could be really, really nice, and it could help you sleep and relax. So, you know, we've got to get better at being more body confident about ourselves, you know, because our partners love us for generally for whoever we are. That's why they're with us, you know, and they like us. And I think we're too self-critical, and we're too busy worrying about, you know, the way we look and, you know, sort of our orgasm faces.
Yeah. Well, and also on the flip side of that, if your partner's being really critical about your body and making you feel like crap about your body, maybe they shouldn't be your partner anymore. So, yeah.
Exactly. And also, come on the flip side as well, talking about male partners, they don't all look beautiful, do they, either? So, you know, this is the other thing I sort of often talk to women when we talk about, you know, men letting themselves go, men having, you know, sexual health problems. And often it's because of their unhealthy lifestyle. You know, they're not eating healthily, they're not exercising, they may be drinking, they may be smoking, you know, and that ends up, they end up having erectile problems then. So that impacts upon a relationship. So, you know, you often find that women say, well, yeah, my partner's let himself go. So I think we worry an awful lot as women, and actually, you know, sometimes we sort of need to say to our, you know, our male partners, you know, maybe there's something you could do.
Yeah, I mean, their bodies can be messy as well as women's bodies being messy.
Yeah. You know?
So, yeah. And then, so you work, you, so you, you set up your sex shop business in 2007, which feels like a lifetime ago at this point. 2020 feels like the longest year ever. So how does that go? What's it like to run an online sex shop?
It's fun at times. It's hard work. It's really like any other business. You're just getting sex toys and lubricants out and products out of the door, really. So, you know, it's an online business, but obviously we do a lot of calls on the phone. We do a lot of sales on the phone. We have a paper catalogue we send out to customers, which is quite unusual for a sex toy company, because a lot of our customers either aren't online or they don't like shopping online. Yeah. So, you know, actually being able to call for a catalogue, they'll send us a check in the post or a postal order, which is quite old fashioned, but we're servicing, I feel like we're offering a public service to a part of the, you know, demographic that are neglected or overlooked, or it's assumed that they're not actually having sex. So, you know, by advertising in women's magazines, you get a different demographic of person, you end up with amazing conversations with these people, and they've had amazing lives too. So, but also, obviously, you know, we obviously sell sex toys, but we're also a sexual health and pleasure resource as well, which is why we've got all hundreds of articles on the website.
Yeah, it's so fascinating.
I think that was really important for me.
Yeah.
No, it was really important for me to actually have that.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you have that mission and kindness, I suppose, of like helping people live their best lives. You know, you're not just, oh, here, I'm going to make some money off some sex toys. You know, it's like you have that connection and willingness to help people, which I'm assuming your nursing profession played a large part in as well.
And what, I didn't do any of this in my nursing career, apart from the fact, I think on my renal course I did about sexuality of renal patients. Nobody was interested in the results that I came up with, because obviously their sex lives is impacted, especially if you're on dialysis. But I realised that my customers were phoning up and buying sex toys to help them with, you know, post-hysterectomy. They'd had cancer, their partner had erectile dysfunction, and we realised that actually this information isn't out there. People actually don't know what they should be doing or how they can actually help themselves and how they can carry on enjoying sexual intimacy and pleasure, or better sexual health, or regain their sex life. So that was part of the reason why we sort of, you know, had the health information on there too. Problem is, people then think you're just a health website, and we're not, because sexual health and sexual pleasure go hand in hand, and when one's out of kilter, the other one's impacted. So I think you know, we can actually then say to people, well, you know, if you've got this problem, then this sex toy or this lubricant will really, really help you, you know. So that was actually to offer people practical advice, because that's often missing from health information.
Yes.
I've certainly found it in cancer information that it's missing. You know, that's why talking about sex after cancer is really, really important, but also other information too, where I've thought, well, why are they not giving people any advice after they've had a hysterectomy, or you know, why they're not telling people to use a good sexual lubricant? It's because healthcare professionals don't know about it. That's the problem with it.
Yeah. And well, you know, part of your work is like you're working with healthcare professionals in the NHS and private practice about talking, you know, how to advise their own patients and about sexual intimacy as well. So you focus, I suppose, on like body safe sex toys and pH balanced sexual lubricants. So what does that actually mean? So for anyone who was new, I suppose, to sex toys, what's a body safe sex toy?
Well, basically, it's a skin safe sex toy. So we only sell products that are made from skin safe silicon, glass, metal or ABS plastic. We don't sell anything that's made from jelly, latex or rubber, because jelly and rubber are highly porous. And so basically they absorb bacteria. They can also degrade over time, and they also can leach out chemicals, because some of them contain phthalates, which are plasticizers, which were banned from children's toys because they're not good for your health at all. And obviously with latex toys, there's the issue of latex allergy as well. And so we sell the skin safe silicon, and then the glass toys are made from the same glass that you would have Pyrex dishes made from, so borosilic glass. And then the metal toys are made from medical grade stainless steel that surgical instruments are made from. And then obviously the hard ABS plastic, that's completely non-porous. So the most important thing is that these materials have been tested widely and they are safe to use for intimate use. So there's a lot of products out there that actually are quite unsafe and fake products and used products, which is a big problem online, because that's why it's really important to buy from reputable manufacturers and retailers.
Go back to that for a second. Used toys.
Used products. Oh, yeah. Used toys. Yeah.
Okay. Is that like Amazon thing or like an eBay thing?
Well, generally across, yeah, sort of the internet. That's why you need to be really, really careful about what you're buying and who you're buying from, which is why we always say buy from a reputable manufacturer or retailer. Yeah,
so
it can be a real problem.
Don't buy sex toys from eBay, basically. Wow. Okay. Yeah, I didn't think about the used thing. I thought about, you know, you might have like weird materials or unsafe materials. I didn't think about the used part. So okay, that's not good. And then the other part of that was then the pH balanced sexual lube. So again, lube is like, you know, a lot of people have the idea of like, oh, you only use it if there's something wrong. And maybe they might be aware of body safe sex toys, but not necessarily about body safe lube. So where do we educate people around that? And what is body safe lube?
Well, the first thing to say is that wetter is better, whatever your age. And quite frankly, you know, we know that for a fact. And we know that vaginal lubrication is impacted upon so many things, you know, hormonal changes throughout the month, clearly the menopause, breastfeeding, you know, sexual side effects to medication, cancer treatments, you know, stress and anxiety. And there are so many things that impact upon your sexual lubrication. And it's the fact is, you know, you could be feeling completely aroused but dry. And therefore, we always, as a sex toy company, it's, you know, one of the things that we recommend to everybody. Sexual lubricants, yes, we've got thousands and thousands of products on the market. The problem is the ingredients in many of these lubricants. So for myself personally, my experience was using KY jelly and well-known lubricant brands in my 20s and 30s. I got recurrent infections, thrush bacterial vaginosis, cystitis, urinary tract infections, which then led to vaginismus, because every time we had sex, I thought I was going to get an infection, so I'd tighten up and sex would be painful. It wasn't until we set up the company and discovered Yes Organic lubricants and started using them that I realized that my symptoms had disappeared almost within a week, and I couldn't believe it. And I thought, what's going on? And then I realized it was the ingredients. So we recommend that people avoid products that contain glycerin, because glycerin is a sugar and it can cause thrush. So particularly if you are prone to thrush, or if you've been through cancer treatments, or if you have diabetes, people who we know that they're going to, you know, they might get thrush. Or if you start getting thrush with using a lubricant, check the ingredients, because it's probably got glycerin in it. That makes a lube feel quite tacky. It's because it's a sort of quite a sticky ingredient. Then glycols, so they're well-known vaginal irritants. So there's been research done about that. And that's often the ingredient that will, when you put a lube on the first time, it will sting. And you think, oh, you know, and that actually is something that puts people off using lubricants, because they use a lubricant that's got these ingredients. They go, oh, that was awful. Or they get end up with about a thrush. And so then they don't use a lubricant, because they don't then explore and see, well, actually, what else can I use? And then parabens, which we know we should be avoiding, they are weakly estrogenic and we shouldn't be putting them in our bodies. But you've got ones that warm you up, cool you down, which some people love. But they could cause irritation. You've got dyes, so colorants in lubricants, glitter, because we all need a shiny vulva, don't we? And obviously flavorings, which are great for oral sex, but they're not so good for penetrative sex. You know, because again, it's sugar. It's, you know, the flavorings are sweet, and potentially can cause thrush. So, and then things out of your store cupboard or bathroom cupboard that people are using, you know, so the things that have not been designed for as a sexual lubricant, like the baby oil and the Vaseline and the, you know, the olive oil and the coconut. We hear all sorts of hand cream, bio oil, Sudocrem. Yeah. The list is endless.
I heard a coconut.
It's not even slippy, is it?
Yeah, it's not even going to be a fun experience. But
I mean, coconut oil, we always say, well, if you are going to use it, make sure it's 100% pure, you know, the source. Don't use something that you're dipping your fingers always into, because it's not particularly hygienic. And actually, there is research show that it could, you know, it can cause thrush and other problems too. And obviously, it's not compatible with condoms because it's an oil. So, you know, again, it's finding what works for you, really. You know, there's going to be people out there who are more than happy to use, you know, something off the shelf, and they're never, ever going to get thrush. And then people like, you know, me, who has a history of it, I'm really, really careful about my vagina health and intimate health. And, you know, same with vagina moisturizers. We have this real problem with feminine hygiene products on the high street, which we're destroying our intimate health with, because we're cleaning and douching and we're using vagina moisturizers, all of which contain the ingredients I've just talked about.
Yeah. Well, that, I think that's very linked to stigma as well. The idea of, you know, women be worried if there was a smell, so you therefore douche, which can actually make the problem even worse then. So it's a bit of a vicious circle. While some company makes quite a lot of money off your insecurities and actually causing you harm. So just make it clear, you don't need any douches, you don't need perfume, you don't need any of that.
It's a multi-billion-pound industry, which is growing every year, and it's really, really sad. But it's everything that's out there. You know, the vulval makeup, because we all have time to make up our vulvas, don't we? And why would you need to? But, you know, even perfume condoms, why are they being perfumed? I clearly don't understand. But also things like bath bombs and shower gels and, you know, it's our, you know, what we're actually washing ourselves to get rid of that smell. And the worrying thing is, obviously, people end up masking their symptoms, you know, and it could be they've got bacterial vaginosis, or what they're using is causing thrush, or even, you know, vulval conditions like lichen sclerosis or even vulval cancer. You know, we know that people are actually self-treating with over-the-counter medication and not going to their GP. Which is, you know, which is really important if you notice some difference, rather than just self-treating. But it's often because they're too embarrassed.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really important we get across to people that, you know, if you stop using these feminine hygiene products, then they won't sell them, then they will disappear. But, you know, it's getting that message across to people.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. It's so sad, because you've got like bleaching creams and stuff like that. And I think one has a name, something like My Perfect Pink Friend, or, you know, something along those lines. And it's terrible, but it kind of links into the idea of, like, you know, we all have to be the same, we all have to have very neat vulvas and vaginas, and they have to be absolutely perfect, you know. And it's a weird industry, but men have that as well. You can now get like Botox for your scrotum, so you don't have wrinkly balls, basically. But that's a whole new industry, which is...
But we don't have penis washes, though, do we? Because I don't think men would buy them. So it's like, you know, we've got women sort of being, you know, if our shelves in our supermarkets and on the high street, if these products were gone, then we wouldn't buy them, would we? You know, and I think it's a real issue. And of course, we've got celebrities now, you know, they're creating their own brands. And if your favorite celebrity is promoting it, it must be fine for you. And it's like, well, actually, no, they're just cashing in. Or if they're promoting something, it's because they've been paid to promote it. Yeah. So, you know, it is a big, big problem, something I've written about extensively, and I'm always talking about, because I've experienced the problems I've had when I've used feminine hygiene products in the past, and which there weren't as many when I was younger. And I hear it now with people. I'm going, well, what are you actually using? You know, and then you go, ah, that's probably that. and they have no idea. And they go, well, surely it's fine. Surely it's safe to use because I bought it from the local chemist. It's like, well, actually, it's the ingredients in it. That's what's causing your problem. So,
Yeah, that's pretty sad. Like, and then, you know, the difference, maybe people might also not know the difference between like water-based lubes and oil-based lubes and how they interact with different toys and condoms as well. So can you explain the difference between those?
So the water-based lubricants are the most common lubricants around, and they're the closest to your own natural lubrication. But again, be wary of the ingredients in the vast majority of them. And also they're fine to use with any sex toy and with condoms as well. So they're fine. And then oil-based lubricants are lovely because they're longer lasting, but you can't use any oil-based product with condoms because it will destroy them. The Yes Organic lubricant, oil-based lubricant that we sell, is fine to use with our sex toys. But we often say to people, you know, they say, oh, I can use baby oil. And well, we shouldn't be using it anyway, and don't use it with our sex toys because we have no idea what it will do to the materials. And then silicone lubricants, they're nice, they're longer lasting, they're quite slippy. They're fine with condoms, but they're not suitable to use with silicone sex toys because it will degrade the silicone of the sex toy. You've got silicone on silicone, and it will make it feel a little bit, make it tacky, and it won't feel as pleasurable to use.
And so those are the three. An expensive mistake as well, because you don't want to, silicone toys are expensive, you don't want to wreck them.
No, and also the thing about condoms as well, because a lot of people think they're allergic to condoms and it's actually the lubricant on the condom, or it's not well lubricated. And condom brands don't have to list the ingredients on the lubricant on the pack. So we sell skins because they have silicone lubricant on them. So again, that's another thing for people to be aware of as well. If they're actually having an irritation, it might not be, you don't need a non-latex condom. It might be the lubricant on your condom, or it's not lubricated enough.
Oh, you're giving me flashbacks there to something I read, you know, when there's like, That's Life, Take a Break, women's magazines. When I was in my teenage years, and a woman said, I'm allergic to sex. And every time she had sex with her boyfriend, you know, I think she got a rash or something. Like that. He thought he was a real man. I don't know why causing your partner pain would make you a great person. But maybe that was the case. So maybe she was actually allergic to the lube or whatever. And we didn't have that public conversation about this being a possibility.
No, we're just putting it live today. It's called Am I Allergic to Sex? Because I've basically been, but you know, some people can be allergic to semen. And it's a bigger problem we actually are aware of. I've actually put a bit of research in there, but it's quite old research. I couldn't find anything more recent. And there was actually one woman who had an anaphylactic reaction to her husband because she was allergic to penicillin, and he had taken penicillin and it had was in his sperm and it wasn't until afterwards they discovered after she'd had the anaphylactic reaction that she was allergic to penicillin, and he'd been taking penicillin. So that's very, very rare. But it's the condom thing. People are quite surprised. They had no idea. They go, I've been using non-latex condoms. I'm going, well, it's probably the lubricant on the condom, or it's not lubricated enough. So, you know, when I say to people, you know, if you think you're allergic, it's probably those ingredients that I've mentioned before that are causing the irritation. You know, and actually it's not just women who have that problem, but obviously men too. Often men find that they get irritation on the penile tissues or around the entrance of the anus. So, you know, it's actually looking at the ingredients.
Yeah, well, because men can get thrush as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's definitely not talked about as much.
Yeah. No, but also the thing is, if you put if you're using a lube that then stings, that can put a man off using it. And then it means that, you know, you're not enjoying pleasurable sex. So, you know, again, it's that whole thing of finding your lubricant that works for you both. And it's actually persuading a partner that you need the lube. I did a talk recently for a young cancer charity for young women. There were women in their 20s and 30s who were going through the menopause after cancer treatments. And they were saying, you know, the matchiness of trying to say to a partner, well, I need to whip out the lube as well as a condom. Well, I said, really, we should make it the norm that the two go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, because they said it's quite hard, you know, if you're in a relationship and having to say to them, well, you know, I need to use some lubricant. And they're like, because they feel like it's damaging their masculine pride that, well, am I not arousing you? And they don't want to try to have to explain, well, I've been through all this treatment and, you know, and it is a very, very difficult conversation. And I even have older women saying, oh, no, because there's something wrong with me if I have to use lubricant. I'm going, well, no, there isn't. And it will make sex feel so much more pleasurable.
Yeah. But even if you don't have any issues getting wet, you can still use it to add a little bit of extra pleasure to it. It's not something that only needs to be whipped out if there's an issue.
Well, no, and I've always, you know, that's the reason why I ended up with my problems, because we always use lubricant from the start. And you know, wish I'd known about ingredients, but you know, for me, I don't have sex without it. Put it on before we start, you know, and actually some people put it on during sex. They make it as part of their sex play, you know, they just put it on when they're ready to have, if they're having penetrative sex. So, you know, there's so many ways that you can use it and incorporate it into your sex life. And it, you know, and it's sort of, it's actually having that conversation saying, you know, that, you know, not everybody, you know, is, they're not aroused because they're not getting wet. We have to move away from this conversation. And actually the people are in the know who actually always use lube. And I have a lot of conversations with people. And they're having really good sex because, you know, they recognize, oh, I never have sex without lube. Why would you not use lube? And even some of the men have said, oh, some women can be a bit funny when I whip out the tube of lube. You know, because they think, oh, no, I don't need that. When they try to explain, well, actually, it'll make sex feel much more pleasurable and last longer.
Yeah, well, which is a win-win for everybody. So,
yeah, definitely.
What do you think about all the cannabis lubes that are coming out now? They seem to have exploded in popularity, more in the US, I suppose, because their laws are different.
I think there are a lot more out there. The problem is we don't know much about them. There are bit of an unknown quantity, and we know there are issues with the cannabis products that are actually on the shelves in the high street that people are just ingesting orally, because we don't know, you know, they're not regulated. And I think the same is with the cannabis lubricants, but it's for people to find out about themselves. I mean, I know a lot of, you know, healthcare professionals would never recommend them. I don't know anything about them, and I wouldn't recommend them because there hasn't been any research about them. There's no long-term, we have no idea of the long-term effects. And obviously you're going to put them inside your vagina or on your vulva or inside your anus. They're highly, areas of your body that are highly absorbent. So we don't even know what you're absorbing. Mm. But, you know, I know a lot of people like using them. They think they're effective. But I do think we need a lot more research in this area to actually understand what they're doing, you know, but the market again is growing. It's a bit like the feminine hygiene industry. Yeah. You know, again, it's another part of the market that's actually growing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So pause for concern. So maybe just stick to the oil and plant-based for now while we wait for science to help.
Yeah, definitely.
Us. Yeah. So I suppose to start wrapping up, what would your dream sex education consist of? That you would give to everybody else?
I think, well, we do sex education every day on the phone, and generally I'm talking to people about sexual lubricants. I'm talking to them about their intimate health and, you know, the simple things you can actually do to make your sexual health, intimacy and pleasure much better. Or if it's already good, make it better, or just improve it if it's not very good, or if you're even just starting, you know, just to make it feel good from the start. So for me, it'd be recommending, you know, sexual lubricants to people, you know, simple, good skin safe sex toys, and having that conversation. I think it's actually giving people the confidence to have a conversation with a sexual partner about what they like, what works for them, exploring their bodies, you know, and finding out, you know, ways to make their sex life feel even better, whatever their age, whatever their sexual orientation. You know, this is really important. We have to include everybody in the conversation. And I think at the moment, not everybody's being included in the conversation, and we need to make it completely inclusive so that everybody who wants to have pleasurable sex can.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that includes, you know, you talked about how sex has changed with the perimenopause and then, you know, postmenopause as well. So do you think sex for that age group and experience needs to be really overhauled at the moment to re-put that focus on pleasure back into the conversation?
I think it's whenever we talk about the menopause, we often don't talk about sex. There's a lot more conversation now. Obviously, I've talked hugely about sex in the menopause, just because it's what I do, and I'm a menopausal woman, and I talk about the things that I've done to keep my intimate health healthy, and so I can still enjoy pleasurable sex. So, you know, I think we have to say to these women, your sex life doesn't just end at the menopause, and there are things that you can do about it. But, you know, so many people are so grateful when they go, oh, I had no idea. Well, that's made such a difference. And I think, you know, we are seeing more and more people including good sex advice in their books and in articles. We still need to get healthcare professionals to talk about it. I still hear about people working in menopause care who don't have the conversation about sex, and I don't quite know how they can not have the conversation about sex. And again, I still hear people recommending poor products, poor vagina moisturizers, poor sexual lubricants to menopausal women, which then cause thrush. So again, we can change that dialogue and actually say there are better products out there which would be more suitable for this group of women. And also sex toys, you know, have that conversation about sex toys, because it's often sometimes the first time women are buying a sex toy to help them overcome vaginal tightness or the decreased sexual sensation, so they're struggling to orgasm. And then it opens up a whole world to them that actually there's a lot of fun to be had out there. So, you know, because it's really sad to hear when relationships break down because of menopause, when they don't have to. And it's often the physical relationship that actually can be impacted upon. So, you know, there's a lot of work going on, really, really good work going on there. And obviously, you know, as a menopausal woman, and I'll be a postmenopausal woman, I'll carry on talking about sex and the menopause and my own experience too.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that you do that work, because it's just so well needed, and you're just a wealth of information. I'm just very grateful people like you exist in the world and are doing the work that you're doing. So thank you on behalf of my future menopausal self. So,
yeah. You'll be well prepared now. You'll know where to come to, so it'll be fine. You'll be sorted.
I have a stack of lubricant lined up, ready to go. God, my partner would be happy to hear that. Perfect, Joe. So where can people find you? You have joedevine.com and your Twitter?
Twitter is joedevineuk, and then I'm samtalksex on Twitter, and I'm also samtalksex on Instagram. I've just joined it, so you have to bear with me at the moment. And we are joe.devine on Instagram, and we're also on Facebook too. And obviously I've written extensively in the media as well, but obviously the website's a huge resource of information for you to come to. We've also got a YouTube channel as well.
Excellent. Oh, yeah, and I highly recommend like people to check out your website, because there's so much on there about so many different topics, and you could lose quite a few hours educating yourself with all your articles. So thank you so much for putting that good work and fun back into sex in the world.
No, and I'm always happy to advise people on the phone if they have the courage to give us a call, and we normally end up having a bit of a giggle at the end of it, even if they are quite nervous. So, you know, we are available on the end of the phone if somebody wanted to have a chat and get some more advice.
Perfect. Listen, thank you so much, Sam. You've been an absolute star and a fascinating conversation. And I hope some more people go buy some lube as a result and have a lot more fun. Perfect.
All right. Thank you ever so much, Caroline, for inviting me anyway. Take care now.
Thanks. So that's us for today, folks. Thanks a mil for listening. And please give us a follow on social media. Our Twitter is @glow_west_. And we are also on Instagram with Glow West Insta, where we post loads of really fun graphics about sex education, and you'll learn something new every day. So again, if you like what we have to say, please support us via Tortoiseshack on the Patreon. So that's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And if you have any topics or any questions that you'd like to discuss, drop us a DM on Twitter, and see you soon.